Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, 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 one and all, to another edition of the official Redbird Rants podcast. This is episode 11 of season 2, and I'm your host, Tito Rivera. I'm one of the co-editors for RedbirdRants.com, and tonight I am joined by two contributors, Christian May Suzuki and Dan Campbell. Christian, how are we tonight?
Doing all right. A little disgruntled that we can only score one run off Jason Hamill, but hey.
Yes, and that is going to be a topic tonight. Dan, how are we doing tonight?
Doing great. I'm excited about some recent developments with this team. Hoping to see a rally. There's still a little time left tonight. And excited to talk Cardinals baseball with you guys.
Yes, and we do have a great show for you guys tonight. We are going to be talking about the big surprise that is Miles Michaelis, the news surrounding Alex Reyes, Matt Carpenter maybe showing some signs of life, and we will dive into some Manny Machado trade talk because I did see a couple of trade opinions today and over the weekend while I was in Vegas. So we will definitely dive into that. But let's talk about tonight's game, guys. Let's get right to it. Obviously, you know, a different story from yesterday's showing against the Kansas City Royals. And Christian, you nailed it on the head, one run off of Jason Hamill. What's your biggest takeaway should the Cardinals lose tonight?
I mean, one of the big things for me is, man, Dexter Fowler does not look all. I mean, he's been struggling, obviously, but tonight was just egregiously bad. I think really a good summation of the whole thing is the fact that he swung on the 3-0 and popped up basically lazy pop fly to left field. I mean, you can't have that in a leadoff hitter just over and over and over again.
Yeah, and I think that's a good way to summarize it as well. Dexter Fowler just hasn't been the player, you know, the Cardinals expected, and you might be as crazy as to say as expected since he signed with the St. Louis Cardinals. Dan, what's your takeaway from tonight's game should the Cardinals lose?
My takeaway is missed opportunities. You know, the score is 3-1 as we sit here right now, and we've had a lot of opportunities, especially with the bottom of the order. Munoz has had three hits, I think. A couple of times Pena was on or moved him over, and we've had two runners on with two outs a few times, and this team's inability to drive in the run with two outs and runners in scoring position has been highlighted by this game. And frankly, although he, you know, got into a little bit of trouble at times, maybe because of a bad tactical decision by the manager, Luke Weaver was really good again tonight. And I think I'm worried that that's going to be overshadowed by the sort of paltry nature of our offense yet again.
Yeah, and that's a good thing to bring up. I, too, you know, if nobody was going to mention it, I was going to actually mention Luke Weaver. You know, this is, what, his second start in a row that he's looked good. You know, sure, you would like to, for him not to give up three earned runs. But that's not that bad. I mean, he did go, what, seven innings tonight, gave you a shot to win. You know, that's what you want out of your rotation. And consider that the Cardinals' starting rotation, you know, overall, again, in the major leagues, is only at a 2.96 ERA. You know, he's right there. He's living on that bubble. So, you know, I agree with you, Dan. I think that's something that probably will get overlooked. Just because of the negativity of not being able to beat the Kansas City Royals, should they not win today, and that's kind of sad because, you know, you have to find some positives in these kinds of games. And when the other, you know, when the other pitcher is on and is just has it, there's not a lot you can do. So I agree with you. I think another positive, and I want your guys' take on this, is Brett Cecil looked pretty good today too. He made some good pitches, and it almost looks like if, you know, maybe Cecil is returning to the person we thought the Cardinals were going to get. What do you think, Christian?
I mean, it's very encouraging to see Cecil pitch like that, but I mean, I don't know if I would go so far to say that. While he did hit a couple of pitches, he did come out. He missed a couple. They weren't necessarily in places that a batter could hit, which is good. But, I mean, they were still kind of – some of them were kind of shaky. So, for a reliever, especially for just one game, I'll take it with a grain of salt. But, I mean, hopefully he continues to trend up. But I can't quite give him the benefit of the doubt just yet.
That's fair. And, Dan, what do you think? Cecil looked good. Do you think he's on the road to redemption here?
I think so, and I sure hope so. You know, Cecil to me is one of those guys, he reminds me a lot of Mike Leake, and maybe it's because they were so closely tied to the time they joined the Cardinals. And Mike Leake was one of those guys who, at least me personally, I just don't like him very much. When he does interviews and stuff, it's always like, gosh, this guy just annoys me. But he's really talented, and because I think a lot of fans share sort of a negative reaction to Cecil, they don't give him credit when it's due. But as you said, I thought he looked really good tonight, and frankly, for at least part of the time with the Blue Jays, he was really dominant and can get guys out from both sides of the plate. And so he could be a very, very big late-game weapon, which this team needs, because Greg Holland can't do that right now and maybe won't be able to do it all year. And there have been some other problems at the back end of the bullpen, including related to overuse. So I like what he did tonight, Tito. I totally agree with you. And I think he's on the right track, and I hope he's on the right track, because this team needs him.
Yes, and I agree. I mean, the team does need him. It seems like the bullpen would be way better off if he was able to control his stuff and make sure he's on pace to be the reliever the Cardinals intended to get when they signed him to that pretty big contract for a middle relief pitcher. But let's go ahead and switch over to, you know, the guy that seems to be able to be, you know, do no wrong at this point, and that's Mr. Lizard King himself, Miles Michaelis. Guys, there's not really any way around saying this, but he has to be your biggest surprise this year for the St. Louis Cardinals, without a doubt. Or is he? Sam?
I think he is. I think he has to be. I love what I've seen. Fun stat that I just saw, and I'm not sure if this is accurate, but it was accurate through yesterday. He's fourth in the major league, in the National League, in ERA. Carlos Martinez is first, and sandwiched between them is Max Scherzer and somebody else. It's slipping my mind right now. But he's fourth. That is insane. Who expected that? And his contract for being a top five ERA guy who never walks people, and I know he walked one guy his last start, but he never walks people. And I just want to do a little callback. I know a lot of fans were really, really worried about him after his first couple outings of spring training. And I was at one of the spring training games that he started and that he actually gave up three or four runs in. And I said on this podcast when I got back to a couple of you guys privately that he looked way, way better than the stat line showed. And that was sort of a gimme home run. His fastball is his best pitch. And when he locates it, his off-speed stuff becomes nasty. And I think we're seeing that in full effect, along with sort of the newness of hitters not knowing what he is and what he's about. And so I'm really excited to see if he can sustain this throughout the year. But so far, he's been a great surprise and really has anchored this team while Carlos Martinez has been on the shelf.
And to highlight what Dan was saying right there about Michaelis's ERA, he has a 2.24 ERA. The three pitchers better than him, as Dan said, was Carlos Martinez with a 1.62, which is incredible, Jacob DeGrom of the New York Mets at 1.75, Max Scherzer right behind him at 1.78, and then again, Miles Michaelis at 2.24. Now, that is incredible. Then you go to this. The fifth, the FIP for Carlos Martinez is 3.36. Miles Michaelis is actually lower to 9. And if you did an XFIP, 4.34 for Carlos Martinez and 3.15 for Miles Michaelis. So technically, overall, Miles Michaelis has been, at least in what you can see, as good, maybe, if not better than Carlos Martinez. So is he a big surprise to you, Christian, or were you expecting this?
I mean, it's really hard to say that you were expecting this. I mean, there's no question that he's definitely the biggest surprise. I mean, part of the concern at the beginning of spring training, I think, was, you know, he was in the Japanese league and he was a very high volume strike thrower. And at least my concern was that if, sure, it works in the Japanese league, but would he have the stuff to really make batters miss with that type of approach at the major league level? Because obviously it is a bit of a step up. I mean, nothing against the Japanese league. It's certainly probably the second best professional baseball league in the world, but the major leagues is still, it's just another game. But I mean, he's really shown that, I mean, he can make batters miss. I mean, he's not a particularly huge strikeout pitcher, but I mean, his curveball has been breaking very nicely. He hasn't really put it up too high in the zone. It definitely looks a lot better in terms of location than it did in spring training. And I think that's part of why he's been so successful. And to Dan's point about Michaelis's walk, not only does he not walk people, but he doesn't really get to three ball counts either. I wouldn't be surprised if he had the lowest three ball count total in the league right now, because I rarely see him get to three balls. And I mean, it's always nice when, for the most part, for the last couple of years, we've had a lot of pitchers who just couldn't throw strikes. It's always nice to have someone who can really like put it in there, and you know, don't have to worry about 6 walks and 7 walks and the pitcher losing the game on himself. You know, so I mean, it's definitely insane how well Michaelis has played. He's definitely the surprise of the year.
Yeah, and to your point again, to both of your points, his walk rate per 9 innings is a staggering, and I mean absolutely jaw-dropping, 0.90. That is insane. I think the closest one might be Noah Syndergaard at 1.99 right now. You know, those top three pitchers that we talked about in Martinez, DeGrom, and Scherzer, they all have higher than a 2. So, you know, Michaelis is doing something right, and that's obviously, you know, his strong suit right there. I mean, in the 4 games that he's pitched in May, he's given up 4 walks and 27.1 innings pitched, 3 earned runs, 19 strikeouts, a 0.99 ERA. I mean, the guy has pitched phenomenally in May. And honestly, he just looks to be getting better. And I know wins don't matter.
He should be the player of the month. He should be the player of the month, Tito, for the whole league.
Yeah, he will be my player, pitcher of the month. I'll probably write an article similar like I did to with Carlos Martinez. But, yeah, he would be the player of the month, I think, just because you have that injury that happened to Carlos, which, you know, not many of us really expected or saw coming. And so somebody had to step up. and Michaelis did so. And, you know, just to put it even more perspective, you know, he allowed 3 home runs his first start on April 2nd. Since then, only 3 home runs more in 7 more starts, 8 more starts, I should say. You know, he's really shown that he can do what is necessary and what is asked of him. And, you know, those are, you know, there was a game that he pitched 7 innings of no-run ball against the Chicago Cubs. You need that at this point in the season, or at this point in the effort to get back to the playoffs for the St. Louis Cardinals. You just have to. And I think the big surprise here is that because he was in the Japanese League, you just really didn't know how it was going to translate, as Christian was saying. And one thing that I think you could have pointed to was that he threw 180 innings in the Japanese League. And that has to say something. I mean, an inning is an inning's worth. And sure, yes, the batters are different, but his body's conditioned. So I'm not surprised that he can go out and get a complete game. So this is shaping up to be a really, really interesting story this season. And, you know, a lot of people all of a sudden are talking all-star. So, Dan, I'm tossing it to you on this one. Do you think Miles Michaelis will be an all-star come July?
I think so. I think there's no reason. How many starts? He's like 10 starts into the season, 9 or 10.
Nine.
Okay. He's a horse. That's what's most so compelling about his numbers. I don't know what he's averaging, but I'm sure he's averaging more than 6 innings a start, and I'm sure there are not that many pitchers who are doing that. And right now, he's the best pitcher on the Cardinals who's healthy. You know, because Carlos will give him a run for his money, hopefully, when he comes back. But the Cardinals need a representative, and it's going to be him from the pitching side, I have to think. And not only is he on the road to being an all-star at this point, he's a third of the way through his season, even though we're only fourth or fifth of the way through the actual season, because he's going to start 30 or so games. And so he's a third of the way to being a Cy Young contender. Let's call it what it is. Anytime you're in the top 5 in all of the metrics that he's in, you're contending for a Cy Young award. And that's what his numbers are right now.
Yeah, and I think the one thing that Miles Michaelis gets a little suffers a little bit is that strikeout ability doesn't necessarily blow you away. But when you're not walking anybody, you don't necessarily need to strike somebody out. So you just need to pitch to contact. So, Christian, I'm throwing it to you here. Will Miles Michaelis be an all-star come July?
I think he can end up being an all-star. I mean, there's no reason to think that he's going to implode in some way that would make his numbers not look as appealing as they are right now. I mean, 2.24 is, I mean, that is certainly impressive. And a 1.2 WAR already as a starter. I mean, he has been, I mean, solid. He's arguably, like you guys have been saying, he's arguably been the best pitcher on the Cardinals so far this year. To Dan's point, he's actually had only 9 starts in 60 innings. So, yeah, he is averaging over 6 innings a start. I mean, I think that does come in part from the difference in culture in the Japan League and just how long they can leave their guys out sometimes and how long that guys can practice even on off days when some American teams would find it, you know, unhealthy. So he's definitely got that sturdiness. Now, I don't think that he's going to be able to continue at this pace. His strikeout rate is quite low, and obviously the newness factor will slowly start to fade away. It's obviously not – I don't think it's going to crater him. I mean, right now he's at a .266 batting average balls in play, which for a contact guy, I mean, that's pretty dang solid. I expect it to go up, his numbers to take a little bump up because, I mean, at the end of the day, like Dan was saying, if he keeps up at this pace, he is a Cy Young candidate. And I mean, he's been great, but I just don't think that's who he is as a pitcher. But, I mean, I certainly think at this pace, it's going to be hard to deny him an all-star spot.
Yeah, and there's no reason to believe that if he continues this pace, he wouldn't be an all-star. And the same goes for Carlos Martinez. If he comes back and continues to be the same pitcher that he was, there's no reason why he wouldn't be an all-star either, you know. So imagine this. What happens if the Cardinals, all their representatives are pitchers, and the only position player, maybe, even though he was hurt for the entire month of May, would be Yadier Molina. But to put it in perspective, to kind of wrap this up, Fangraphs has Carlos Martinez at a 1.0 WAR rating, Michaelis a 1.2. So if that kind of tells you anything, kind of take that with a grain of salt, because Carlos Martinez does have one less start and 10 innings, fewer innings right now, but that's pretty dang good. And you have to Miles Michaelis for what he's done for the St. Louis Cardinals so far. So guys, let's take our first break. You're listening to episode 11, season 2 of the official Redbird Rants podcast. Stick with us. And welcome back to episode 11, season 2. We just got done talking about Miles Michaelis and him being the biggest surprise and being arguably the best pitcher on the St. Louis Cardinals staff so far this season. But there's another pitcher that's coming up, guys, and I know I'm sure both of you are excited to talk about him, and that's going to be none other than Mr. Alex Reyes himself. At this point, I'm sure everybody has heard the news surrounding him that he's going to come back into the rotation. They're not exactly sure when that will be. You know, he's scheduled to come off the DL on May 28th. I don't think that's going to happen. I think it'll be a couple weeks out after that to keep his arm fresh. But, guys, this is exciting times for the St. Louis Cardinals. Dan, what do you make of this right now?
I make of this, and I'm going to refer to a conversation we had in our group message of the contributors and editors. This is the best rotation in the National League with
Come
Alex
on,
Reyes.
Come on, give me the praise. Give me the praise.
Which I know we talked about. I mean, there was some conversation about the Mets maybe being better. Obviously, the Nationals have Scherzer and Strasburg. But Alex Reyes, I mean, people, because he's been hurt for so long, as, by the way, Greg Holland puts this game out of reach for the Cardinals with another absolutely horrible performance.
We'll talk about him later because I have a going pick with people.
Okay, sorry. Alex Reyes, I mean, he came up and just dominated major league hitters, and I think he's going to pick up right where he left off. And the Cardinals have a difficult decision to make. Well, it looks difficult, but honestly, it's not very hard. I think they should clearly go to a six-man rotation. I mean, there's not a better example of any team who should do that in the league except the Cardinals when Alex Reyes comes up. But I'm so excited to see his stuff. It sounds like his arm is healthy. He's throwing hard. His off-speed has gotten better, and he has movement. He didn't just sit on his butt. He was rehabbing and working hard and working on his pitchability and grips and his, you know, body tone and conditioning. So I'm really excited to see him come up and just dominate. He is the X factor. He's better than any pitcher arguably on the staff, including Carlos Martinez. He's that good. And he's taller than a lot of the pitchers, which matters a lot with the plane that he's delivering at.
Yeah.
He reminds me of Noah Syndergaard. And I think he could be that good. And I'm really excited to see him. And this, it's like you hear that stupid cliche about like someone coming off the DL who's like an acquisition for the team. And, you know, it is a little silly to talk about it that way, but that's exactly what he is. He's like trading for an ace starting pitcher at the end of May. And I hope he starts on Tuesday. There's been some talk about maybe him starting Tuesday in Gant's spot. I think that would be great to see him, and I hope he does really good because he's uber talented. And I'm so glad we didn't trade him for all those players he was speculated to be wanting to trade for.
And I want to talk about that. And Christian, we'll get your opinion here quickly. And Dave, kind of make this brief. When you have an arm like Alex Reyes, the mantra should be the best is yet to come. And you know that that's going to happen. I personally never thought that they were going to trade him. But the Cardinals would have been crazy to do that, right?
I think so. I mean, you don't – I mean, look at the Mets getting Syndergaard. The Mets got Syndergaard in exchange for R.A. Dickey. I'm so sorry. But like a 37-year-old R.A. Dickey got them a – 6 foot, a billion guy who throws a trillion miles an hour. You know what I mean? Like that, it would have been something like that. And like, you better win the World Series if you trade a guy like that. And the Cardinals weren't in a position to get someone like that. And so I'm really glad they didn't do it.
Sure. So Christian, Dan's head is today. What do you think? Alex Reyes is coming back. Are you excited? And, you know, what should Cardinal fans expect from him?
I mean, this is arguably the most anticipated and exciting debut of a pitcher since Steven Strasburg. I mean, we've seen – I think that it's especially good that we've seen Reyes progress through his minor league starts, in particular his pitch count and getting through innings. I think in his first – rehab start, it was around 20. By the time he got to his start in Double A, it was already all the way down to 12. And that's really a sign that he's starting to be able to locate his pitches, starting to be able to really get a good grasp of them and be able to put them in the spots they need to get good batters out. And I mean, the only big problem with him was his ability to really locate the ball. And so if he can do that at a decent level, I mean, when you look at the stuff he has, I mean, he is a baseball pitcher prototype dream. And the dude can throw 100 miles an hour. He can throw a curveball that breaks 10, like basically a foot and drops off the table. I mean, he's got incredible spin rate. I mean, his stuff just looks lively. He is, and he's obviously proven in the minor leagues that he's ready. So, I mean, this could be the start of a new era. And I don't say that lightly. This could be start of something big.
Yeah, and it very well could. But there is going to be one big aftershock here. And that is somebody is going to have to be the odd man out of this St. Louis rotation. There's just no way around it. And so that leads us to our next topic. Who is that going to be? Because the obvious candidates you have are Michael Wacha and Luke Weaver, but neither of them have pitched so poorly that you would have to. So that may lend the hand to Dan's suggestion of a six-man rotation. But Mozeliak has come on record saying that that's not going to happen. So, Christian, if the Cardinals stick with a five-man rotation, who's the odd man out?
I'm going to throw a little curveball. I think it will end up being Flaherty. I mean, I know he has pitched incredibly well. He looks great and he looks ready, but there's just the feeling of, you know, they want to give Weaver, you know, a full year to sort of settle in. And I think that they're still okay with floating Flaherty in the minors for one more year. And I mean, I don't think that sending Wacha down would be beneficial. I think that for a pitcher as established as him who hasn't really been sent down and suddenly to get knocked off because of to get replaced like that with the way he's pitching, I think that would I think that would be bad for his mental state. So I would stay away from that. The six-man rotation is interesting, but concerns me in that you have to really be able to sustain it throughout a whole year, because, you know, pitchers and starting pitchers, they'll develop a rhythm in their rest. They'll develop a routine in each rest day, and, you know, they'll start sink into this routine and get into, you know, kind of a rhythm throughout a season. So if you're constantly changing the number of rest days that they have, and, you know, you're constantly shifting the scheduling around, with injuries and such, you know, it can really throw some guys off sometimes. And that might not be the kind of risk that the Cardinals are willing to take. And at the end of the day, with his age and everything, and just the overall overall time he spent this year, the overall time he spent last year, I think that Flaherty will be the guy that ends up getting sent down.
Yeah, and you made some great points, and you know, I think one thing that lends to your kind of notion as well is Flaherty right now might be the biggest trade piece the Cardinals have. If you are looking to upgrade with a bat, for instance, a Manny Machado, who we'll talk about a little later, and I think that gives you, you know, some credit. So, Dan, having heard what Christian said, who's the odd man out for you? Is it Flaherty, or is it some of the other names that I mentioned?
Well, in the short term, it's Gant. So that's easy, because Carlos is not back yet. I know we're talking about him coming back. We've gotten some good news. So in the short term, whoever comes back first, Gant is going down. That's easy.
Right. Let's assume that Carlos Martinez is back, and you have the rotation of Martinez, Waka, Weaver, Michaelis, and Flaherty, for instance.
Yep, because that's what I figured you were getting at. Yep, okay. In that case, I think it's going to be Weaver. I just think that they want to play the hot hand with Flaherty. He's locked in right now. He's so dominant. I mean, I don't think there's any chance that it's going to be Waka. Waka's pitching great. His ERA is 3.08. You know what I mean? He doesn't go as deep in games as you want him to, but, like, he basically gives you into the sixth inning at a 3.08 ERA. That's pretty solid. He's the Lance Lynn of this year, and that's what they're going to ride him as. It's not going to be Michaelis, obviously. He's the best pitcher on the team right now. So, I mean, really, we're talking about a decision between Flaherty and Weaver, which, by the way, I mean, the real answer is to keep them both up here because they're both ready and they're performing at a high level up here. So the idea that there's just this refusal to go to a six-man rotation is totally nonsensical to me. It makes all the sense in the world to limit the innings on these younger guys and on Waka, frankly, as Colton Wong leads off the ninth with a single to the opposite field. It just makes all the sense in the world. It makes too much sense to not do it. But given that they're saying that they're not going to do it, I think you ride your hot hand here and you play the option carousel whenever one of the pitchers starts struggling. And effectively, you get both guys while they're hot. Flaherty starts struggling at the major leagues, for example. You would option him and recall Weaver and see how he's doing when he's back up, and then you would option him and recall Flaherty. And it's like musical chairs, like they've been playing with the bullpen. I mean, that's really the other approach here. So that's what I think would happen.
It's so tough. I mean, when I originally came up with, you know, this, you know, the topics for today, I'm thinking, you know what, Luke Weaver is going to be my choice for sure. But then he goes out and does this tonight, pitches well, you know, he gives up 3 earned runs. That's fine. It's not that big of a deal. You expect the Cardinals to be able to hit Jason Hamill, as Christian alluded to earlier. So, you know, it's tough. I mean, it really is a tough choice, and I know it's going to be a tough choice for John Mozeliak when it comes to that. And unfortunately, yes, John Gant is going to be the short end of the stick here, and he's going to be the one that gets options. So really, we're going to be probably talking about who Carlos Martinez will be replacing. But effectively, it is Alex Reyes replacing somebody in this rotation, because when you have an arm like Alex Reyes, you can't keep him out. He's just that good. And so, you know, you kind of have to chalk it up to who's playing the hot hand right now, much like, you know, a couple weeks ago, I think Dan and I and Larry talked about with Greg Holland and Bud Norris and saying who would be the one that was going out for the ninth inning for the St. Louis Cardinals for the time being. And so I think it's the same way as Dan is saying here. You've got to play the hot hand while you can. And if he does struggle, either you give him a second chance to get back on track, or you do use your option. But at some point, something's got to give. And I think that's where you'll see the resolution happen at the trade deadline. But, again, we'll get to that a little bit later. Do you guys have anything else to add when it comes to Alex Reyes?
No, I don't think so.
Just get ready, Cardinals fans, because he's better than everybody else in the rotation right now, and those guys are really freaking good.
Yeah, and I completely agree with that. So let's go ahead and get to our next topic, and that's somebody that has been a frequent topic of ours on our podcast, and that is Mr. Matt Carpenter, who seems to be finding some light, maybe. I mean, as of recent play, he's been hitting very well. Obviously not so much today, but you can't blame him when he was 3-for-28 to begin the game against Jason Hamlin. But he has shown some life, right, Dan?
Yeah, I think before today, I mean, he's been lacing doubles left and right lately, which is a great sign. He's up to 13, which is not terrible. I wouldn't be surprised if that's the team lead, although I'm not exactly sure. His OPS plus is up to 99, which makes him about average. He's barely hitting over the Mendoza line now, but somehow that's like a 70-point improvement. So his batting average has raised over 70 points in the last, like, 2 weeks, and he's been hitting, like, 500, and his numbers are still total garbage after that performance, but they are trending upwards. So, I like what I'm seeing lately. He's taking better at-bats, obviously not tonight, but nobody's really taking good at-bats tonight. Other than a few dinking singles all over the field from Munoz and Ozuna. So I like what I'm seeing. I like the extra base hits. I'm still concerned in that even when he's hitting the ball hard, he's only pulling the ball. So I don't like that. When he was at his best in 2013, he was smoking doubles to the left center field gap, like, with regularity. And he doesn't hit to the opposite field at all anymore. And that's a problem. And it's going to be a problem when he gets into slumps, because hitting the other way and beating the shift or laying down a bunt are ways that he could get himself out of a funk. And the last thing I'll say about him is I hated what he said the other day. He basically said something to the effect of, well, I've had stretches like this previously in my career. They just weren't to start the season, and so it just looks worse right now because it's the start of the season. And to that, I say, well, first of all, that's what you said last year when you hit 240, which is garbage. And to that, I also say that all we heard this spring training was that Matt Carpenter was healthy and that he was, like, going to be a 300 hitter again, and he was done bailing out for power. Well, now he's not hitting for average, and he's not hitting for power. And so I hate hearing comments like that because the mindset is all wrong to me. But I do like the recent results, so I'm encouraged by those, and I hope they continue.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of strange how this story has happened with Matt Carpenter and with all the quote-unquote bad luck talk. I've kind of just said, you know what, I'm not going to pay attention to Matt Carpenter anymore, because, one, he's on my fantasy teams and he hasn't done jack crap to this point. So I've kind of tossed Matt Carpenter out of my mind. But Christian, having heard what Dan has said, you know, what's your thoughts on the mini resurgence of Matt Carpenter?
Well, the one thing that I've really noticed recently is that his swing has been a lot more relaxed. Like toward the beginning of the year, and when he was bailing out for power, I mean, his swing looked like a coiled spring. You know, there was no real control. It was you pulled it back and then you let it go, and it would just go at the same speed as hard as you could. That same sort of tightness every time. But with these last couple of bats, it sort of seems like he's finally starting to loosen up. He's starting to sort of see the pitches and sort of actually try and make contact with the ball instead of just loading up and letting go. To Dan's point about him pulling the ball all the time, one of the big problems I think this year for him has been the fact that a lot of shifted really, really hard and overloaded the right side of the field, and he has been totally unable to hit away from that. He has hit into that shift a lot. I don't know what the exact percentage is, but I'm sure it's above 70-75%. I mean, he has not been able to hit the ball outside of the shift, and teams have really been taking advantage of that this year. You look at a guy like Tyler O'Neill. I mean, even today, Tyler O'Neill, they had a huge shift to the left side for him, and he hit the ball right through the hole in the opposite field. Just like a good contact hitter should. So, I mean, if a rookie who's known for hitting home runs and whose main asset is hitting home runs can do that, then surely a guy like Matt Carpenter, who has professed to becoming a contact hitter again, has proven that he can in past years and is slowly starting to regress or progress back into the player that he once was. I mean, he certainly looks, to me at least, at the plate a slight bit more relaxed, a slight bit more confident. And, I mean, I think it's definitely a good step as long as he keeps it up.
Great points, guys. I mean, it's obvious Matt Carpenter needs to be the better player here for the St. Louis Cardinals. And not just because for himself, but the team is just overall better. The lineup is overall better with him being able to rip doubles in the two hole. That's a valuable thing that the Cardinals could have. And if, and I really do mean if, Marcelo Zuna heats up, you know, having that threat behind Carpenter and Martinez and even Pham, you know, that spells some good news. And obviously, you know, the offense today, you know, lose to the Royals 5-1, and imagine this, all your hits being singles. You know, having, you know, the Cardinals are one of the worst teams in slugging percentage-wise and extra base hits, and so seeing Matt Carpenter hit doubles again, it's refreshing. You know, he was a doubles machine, and if you can get back to that, that's going to be very refreshing for the Cardinals. So let's take our second break here. You're listening to Episode 11, Season 2 of the Official Redbird Rants podcast. Stick with us. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Episode 11, Season 2. I'm your host, Tito Rivera, and I'm joined by Christian Mace-Suzuki and Dan Campbell. So far, we've had a great conversation about the St. Louis Cardinals and a couple of the exciting pieces, and then some mediocre pieces. And we're going to continue with the mediocrity here. And the reason I say that is because Greg Holland, once again, has shown the inability to keep games close, has shown the inability to pitch, has just not been the same person. And I want to read this tweet to you guys, and I want to get your reaction from it. And you may have even seen it already. But this was Craig Edwards, and this is Greg Holland's line in his first 17 appearances in 2018. Okay? 8.76 ERA, 6.37 FIP. Greg Holland's last 19 appearances of 2017, 8.47 ERA, 6.57 fifth. Yeah, not good at all. Christian, I'm going to ask this very simply because I think it is an intriguing question. What happens first? The Cardinals cut Greg Holland, or they send him down?
Ah, man, that's a really, it's, for me, I mean, it's really hard to say because, you know, you hear Greg Holland say that he won't go down to the minors. You hear the Cardinals organization say that you're not going to send him down to the minors. But we all know that that's not all there is to it. That's not all that they're thinking. And that there's definitely a lot more behind the scenes that if we knew would paint a better, much better picture of exactly what's going on, exactly how Holland and the Cardinals management is feeling, et cetera. But if I want to go off of what they've said and what everybody is sort of motioned to so far, I would have to say that there's no way in hell that Greg Holland will allow himself to go to the minors. So I would definitely say that they would probably end up cutting him first because, I mean, if we're going to follow the Cardinal way, you know, where everyone has to be sort of willing to do their part for the greater good of the team, and you have a guy struggling who refuses to go to the minors, I mean, in the past, that has definitely been a prime cut candidate. I mean, the only real reason that it's been so tough so far is because of all the injuries and just the fact that we just paid him this year. And that would just be – it would be a bad look for Mozeliak and for Gersh and for the front office, especially since this is, you know, one of Gersh's first years. So, I mean, it's really, really tough for me to envision either of those things happening. But if I do see something happening first, I would say it would definitely be cutting him.
All right, Dan. Same question. Does the cut happen or does it get sent down first?
I don't think either will happen. Even though he's struggling, I think there were some encouraging signs tonight, like his velocity. I think he's been around 91, 92 for the most part in his outings. He was consistently throwing 94. Now, he had no clue where the ball was going, but that's been true regardless of his velocity. So I like to see the velocity there. I think a lot of it's mental right now and locating the ball. And, you know, there was a really good moment when Willie McGee went over to him in tonight's game and, like, said, hey, keep your head up. Quit beating yourself up. And that's tough because our fans are even booing him right now, which is hard to do. So, you know, obviously I'm not happy with anything that he's done so far. I'm hopeful that he'll rebound, and I'm not sure what the fix is, but if it's health in any way possible at all, then he should go to the DL and then do a rehab assignment as sort of a faux option of him. But they're not going to put a player on the DL who's not hurt. And so if he's not hurt, then he's just got to start getting the job done. I think he's got a little bit more time. Maybe he'll build up his credibility and some mop-up duties and then get some higher leverage opportunities once he starts performing. But I can't see them eating $14 million, air quotes, this early. And I don't think, like Christian said, he would have to accept a demotion in order to, like, go down and work things out. Otherwise, he would go straight to waivers. Not that anybody would pick him up right now. He would probably clear, but he could refuse the assignment and then he would be released. So I don't see that happening, but that's just my take on it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the other option here is trade him. See what you can get for him. I mean, obviously you're probably not going to get that great of a return, but a change of scenery might do him some good. I can't necessarily think of too many teams right now that would take him. maybe the Mets, maybe the Diamondbacks. But, you know, it's getting to the point where you can't keep trotting him out there. I mean, if he's not going to be able to pitch, it's just not worth it. I mean, if all you're going to do is use a perennial closer, a former perennial closer, all-star Greg Holland, in low-leverage situations, then he's not a closer anymore. He's just a reliever. He's nothing. He is a Brett Cecil, for instance. So if that's not what you signed him to be, it has to be time to cut weight. Has to be. Especially if you need to make room for pitchers. I mean, you could even put Luke Weaver in the bullpen, and I guarantee you he would be better than Greg Holland right now. And that might be something to think about. And I think what, you know, hangs a lot of people is $14 million. That's a lot of money. And that's just the unfortunate part of this business. Personally, I would not have signed Greg Holland to a $14 million deal. And I know I told people in our group chat, you know, I would sign him for between $10 and $12 million. Didn't do anything to impress me at the end of last season. It's obvious that he hasn't done anything now. So it's going to be a very interesting situation moving forward, but my guess is that he's not going to be seeing a lot of pitching in the upcoming games because either the Cardinals blow teams out or they get blown out. So I don't know what to say about him. It's kind of shocking to see him fall so hard, but at the same time, the Cardinals made their bed with this one. They signed him on opening day, assuming that he was ready, and it has not turned out that way. And, it goes back to that conversation Dan, Larry, and I had when it came between him and Bud Norris. And I said it. Even if Greg Holland was ready, I would still hand the ball to Bud Norris. I would still do it now, even obviously. But that's kind of where we're at with Greg Holland. And so, guys, we're going to transition into our last topic of the night. And it should be a good one because it does involve trade talk and Manny Machado. And I want to toss this trade scenario out, and this is done by a Twitter pal, Matt Knowles. And I'm sure you guys may have seen it today. But this is essentially his trade proposal that he came out with, and that was Luke Weaver, Carson Kelly, and Ryan Helsley for Machado. I just want a simple yes or no, and then why from each of you. And let's start with Christian. Go.
Yes, because it would suck to lose Weaver and Kelly, but there's so much depth behind them that the loss isn't so profound per se, because there are people that can sort of fill those gaps. At the same time, there's no one – there's no one on the St. Louis Cardinals, in the St. Louis Cardinals organization that has the prospects to be really what Manny Machado is. And so, I mean, if you can grab him for that kind of price, I would definitely say yes.
All right. Dan, your turn. Yes or no?
No way. No way. I do not want to give up. Carson Kelly to me is a piece that I would consider trading in a deal for even a rental because I think he's just like fallen from grace, but I would not trade Luke Weaver. He's too good. And there's too much team control over him and over Helsley, who by most accounts looks like Jordan Hicks 2.0. So I wouldn't trade that much control of highly, you know, respected prospects, one of which is a major league starter and a good member of a solid, really, really solid rotation. I would not do that. And I don't think Machado, no offense, this offense doesn't deserve Machado. Like you put Machado on this team, and as amazing as he's been this year, he's like probably a front runner for MVP in the American League this year. He still wouldn't make that significant of an impact on the wins and losses of this team because the players around him, even though they would improve by his presence, have been so bad and with the injuries that they don't really deserve him to be in there. We would basically have Matt Carpenter and Dexter Fowler getting more and more time undeservingly for better players if you shove Machado in at shortstop or third base every day.
And that's a fair point. Maybe the Cardinals don't deserve a player like Manny Machado. I'm interested, though, in one particular piece in this equation, especially Carson Kelly. I personally don't see the value in Kelly anymore. I think if you were going to trade him, the time has come for that or is already gone. What do you think, Dan? If the Cardinals are going to use Kelly in a trade, is it time to cut that weight as well?
I think it's a little late to do it, but it's not too late. And so I agree with you. I mean, there's enough depth in the organization at catcher right now with some promising guys coming up. You know, outside of Kelly, two of the Cardinals' top 30 prospects, I think, are catchers, and Kininzer and another kid who I'm forgetting right now. But we've got some good depth coming up, and Yadi signed for two more years. So he's not going to play much, and he's a really good defensive catching prospect, and I think he would help a lot of teams. And so I don't mind trading him, and I think now would be the time if it's not too late already. His value's diminished a little bit because at least last year he had a great offensive year in the minors, and you know, you didn't really know how good he could be at the majors. Now we've just seen that he can't hit. And so his value is diminished a little bit.
Right. And I think that particular piece right there, the offensive side of the baseball, is where Kelly is really hurting himself or hurting his value for the Cardinals. So, Christian, is it too late to add Carson Kelly into a trade piece? Or is there still some bang for the buck if you're looking on the outside?
I mean, if you watch Kelly, I mean, I still think that he's definitely still got some potential. Even though he hasn't really done well, particularly offensively, he's shown decent discipline. Not particularly great, but he hasn't been a sort of a rookie flailer of sorts. And he's also hit the ball pretty hard, even though it's been two other fielders. I mean, the ball has come off of that hard. He's made good contact a pretty solid number of times. So I think that you have that paired with his decent defensive ability. I mean, I really think that you still can get a little bit out of it. Now, I think the longer you wait, the worse it's going to be because he's getting to that age. But if you trade him now when he's still young, I think that you still can at least get something out of it.
And that's fair. So guys, last question here before we take off for the night. I want you guys to give me your best trade package for Manny Machado. Even if you don't think the Cardinals need him or deserve him, give me your best trade package, and we'll start with Dan this time.
I would offer them Carson Kelly and Austin Gomber. And if they take that and that's not enough, then I would not trade for them.
All right, fair enough. Christian, your turn.
Man, it's kind of tough. I would probably, at the very, very, very most, go, obviously it would gauge first, but this is the very most I would give up would probably be something like Weaver, Kelly, and Gomber. I would go no further than that, and I would be pretty reluctant to go that far without another piece. But that is the – if I really truly believe that Machado would complete the team, that was what I would do.
And I think of the two, I'm surprised both of you want to give up Gomber so easily. Him being the best left-handed pitching prospect in the Cardinals organization, that certainly would carry a ton of weight, no doubt about that. But I think the Cardinals would be pretty reluctant to give up their best left-handed pitching prospects. And, I can't even tell you when, since Jaime Garcia, I guess. But they need a left-handed pitching presence soon in the rotation. And if, you know, Gomber's that guy, then I would like to see him stay in the team. I think if I had an ideal trade package right now, based on what the Orioles' needs are, and assuming this would work, I would probably send Weaver. I would probably include Harrison Bader in that, and I would probably throw in another pitching prospect, not necessarily somebody that is top level, but somebody that's worth something. And maybe that is a Helsley, or even maybe Dakota Hudson. And that would probably be where I would rest my case. And the reason I say Harrison Bader, and I'm sure you guys are probably thinking there's no way, you have to think Adam Jones is a free agent next year. And he's probably not coming back to Baltimore. There's probably no way that's happening. So the Orioles are going to be looking for somebody they could use in the outfield who's major league ready, controllable, and a good overall player. And with the depth the Cardinals have in the outfield, they could probably dip their hand into the cookie jar and say, okay, you can have one of these guys. So what do you guys think about that one?
I don't think the Cardinals would give up Bader, but I'm intrigued by your comment that Adam Jones is a free agent at the end of the year. I don't see a lot of interest so far in them re-signing him. So I could see the Cardinals maybe parting with, in a move akin to the Mag Sierra move, someone like Arozarena or Mercado. But maybe not a Bader, O'Neill, or Jag. They seem to be a level above those other two guys. So I could see them maybe one of them and a pitcher, but not. I don't think they're going to trade three players for 4 months of Machado when you can't give him a qualifying offer.
And that's fair.
Yeah.
That's fair. Christian, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, for a guy like with the tools that Bader has or is projected to have, I definitely think it's a little too premature to end up trading him. I mean, I definitely agree with Dan in that, you know, maybe one of those younger but sort of lower level prospects that aren't quite showing the brimming potential that guys, you know, like O'Neill and Bader have. I mean, those guys are definitely still valuable, and they have their appeal to a team, especially a team needing an outfielder, if a guy like Adam Jones goes. So, I mean, I'm reluctant to trade Bader right now, especially if you can't get a long-term commitment from Machado. But, I mean, if he doesn't shape up against right-handers in a few months, I mean, you might possibly start thinking about it.
Well, and to CMS's point, my opinion would completely change if Machado were willing to negotiate an extension as a part of the trade.
I think everybody's opinion would change.
Okay, all right. I would be willing to include a lot more if that were the case. Johan Santana was the last big one to
if
do
you
that.
If you could guarantee a long-term contract for Manny Machado based on what's going on, I think a lot of people would be more willing to give up, you know, higher level for his services, because he is a premier defender at a premier position with contact and power and speed. And you just don't see that hardly in the game anymore. There are a few far in between players like that. So, guys, we're going to wrap it up for tonight. Thanks for joining me, Christian and Dan. Thank you for listening to the official Redbird Rants podcast. This was episode 11, season 2. We will be back at it on Thursday for another edition of the official Redbird Rants podcast. Back at it at 9:30 p.m. Central Time. So join us then. For Dan, Christian, I'm Tito. We'll see you next time, and go Cards.
Go Cardinals.
Thanks, guys.